On this week's show, all the skills and technology with Trevor Baggett from Spring Valley Construction Company.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the Contech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in Contech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's Contech Crew time.
All right, Nathan Wood, good to see you in the studio. The Plexus Patriot, Shield hanging out as usual. Love that. How you doing, man?
Man, missing Chad. Wishing he was, I heard he's not going to be at the summit this year. He's so busy this year, but I miss Chad, wherever you are. Love you, man. But no, it's good to see him. Good to see you.
It's good to have you. And Trevor, how you doing, man?
Good. How are y'all?
This is great. I'm excited. You know, we get to interview a lot of different people. We get to meet a lot of different people. I've been shooting it, getting Trevor on the show for a while. He finally caved in, said he'd come on. You guys will know why in a little bit here. But before we get into the show, remember, we're back on YouTube. Check us out at youtube.com/@TheContechCrew. Follow us on social media. Follow all the other hosts. Follow the guests. This is a community, and we need it to grow, and we need your voices. So, and hey, you might find out from Trevor how you get on the show.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more.
All right. So, Trevor Baggett, tell the listeners about you, your story. How'd you get here? You've had a really cool path, man.
Yeah. So, I started out in construction with my uncle, building sheds with him. We actually built my first two-story shed when I was 11 with my uncle. And then he taught me electrical at 13 and we ran electricity to it. So, I've been in construction for quite a while now.
Oh, that's awesome. We're not building tree houses. We're building sheds. We're building things people can use. And we're letting the 13-year-old run electricity. I think you're old enough now that the statute of limitations is up on that. So
we did have someone come out and check it before we went live.
Okay. All right. So it was inspected. See that? See, even at 13. So that was your uncle. Where did that take you to next?
So after that, I got hooked on construction and took construction in high school, competed in Skills USA, which we'll talk more about later, and then went and got my degree in construction engineering.
So, I mean, you fall in love with it. What is it like? Because a lot of schools don't have that construction in high school. So what was learning construction in high school even like? And, you know, and then lead in, because this is the, you know, you're the second guest recently to talk about Skills USA. So talk about how, you know, what did the high school have? And then, you know, how did that lead you into Skills USA?
Yeah. So the high school, it was back then, it was called Ben Barber Career Tech Center. Now it's called Ben Barber Innovation Academy. And that's in Mansfield, Texas. They had all levels of construction from beginners, where you're learning about hand tools, safety, power tools, basically building little woodworking things, all the way up to, like, it's called Construction Tech 1 and CT 2. That's where you're building sheds, you're building projects. We're doing Habitat for Humanity as a class project and just went from there. Skills. My favorite competition was either carpentry or the Teamworks. Do you know about the Teamworks competition, Jeff?
No, talk a little bit about it. I don't. I'm new to this, and it's one of those crazy things where once you hear something, like, now it's starting to show up everywhere. So talk about the teams.
Yeah, so Teamworks is a group of four people, of students, and they compete together to build a project. A lot of it, it's like building a shed. So you have framing, but they also throw in roofing, plumbing, masonry, and electrical and trim work. So it's a timed contest at district. It's a lot slower. So it's 4 hours typically, and they get to do all the framing and go from there. State, it's a 3-day competition, 2 days of construction and 1 day of demo.
So you got to take down your own thing after you build it?
Yes, and you get scored on demo too.
You get scored? Oh, wow.
Yeah. So my least favorite part of the state competition is the interview process. You had to stand in front of the judges and tell them how you were going to work as a team to build the project. And I was not a fan of public speaking.
Yeah, here you are.
Yeah,
I'm
we
still
got
not
you
a fan,
here,
but I'm getting used to it. You can thank
skills.
Taylor with Outbuild for that.
Thanks, Taylor from Outbuild, for that one. Getting you on the microphone. You've been on the microphone quite a lot recently, and I dig it.
But wait, hold on 1 second, because you know I love measurements. So how were you measured on your demolition? Like, what were the metrics?
So a lot of the metrics, it's like how you're working as a team. Because at day three, you're just completely exhausted. You don't want to be there anymore. You want to get awards done and go home. So you're trying to do it as quick and efficient as possible, working as a team and safely.
So yeah, the safety and basic collaboration, teamwork.
No, it's pretty cool to see them, you know. I know 3 days is a lot, but a lot of job sites, a lot of what you're going to experience in the actual field itself is going to have those components. And, you know, we talk about this all the time. It's like the teamwork is what keeps you safe, right? It's not just efficiencies as much as it is safety and looking out for one another. So it's cool to see them put a little pressure. But we were talking pre-show. Skills USA does like everything though, doesn't it? I mean, you said they have like an interview.
Yeah, so a job interview. They have stuff, robotics, which one of my former coworkers, he heads up for that district. And then news broadcasting, radio broadcasting, culinary arts, welding, automotive, pretty much anything you can think of.
That is so awesome. I mean, it is such a cool way to get kids the skills, but the exposure to what they might be good at, right? Like so much of the problem of schooling right now is exposure to different avenues for careers, right? In school, you have a certain number of subjects that you go through, and that makes you think that that's the future. And it's like, well, there's all these other things out there. How do I fall in love with one of them? And then, you know, like you said, you might be really great at something, but if you can't interview and win the job, get the job, you may never get to use the skill, right? You might end up doing the wrong thing because of it. So you go through all of that. You got your degree now, and you come out and you dive into the field. What was it like diving into the field? And I'm gonna pepper you here. And when did technology become such a big part of this process for you?
So after college, I ended up starting with Amley Development Company. They have an office in Dallas or Addison. And I was an assistant superintendent in the field, also an APM in the office. So I did all the field duties, and then I helped the PM with contract process and all that. And we were about halfway through that project, and they introduced Procore to the company. So we were one of the first project teams to start using Procore.
And how did that go?
Implementation is fun. I've done it multiple times now.
It was fun, and Procore was introduced to the company. This sounds like the School of Hard Knocks. What did you learn from it? You know,
collaboration and teamwork, just like in skills, it's definitely needed if you're gonna make anything go.
And I would assume buy-in too, right?
Yeah, buy-in. Sometimes it's shoved on you from the top down, but once you start getting some field acknowledgement, it works a little bit smoother.
And how'd you learn that process? Because, I mean, you've continued to climb the ranks. So you spent some time there and then moved on to Spring Valley, right?
Yes. So after Amley, I came to Spring Valley in 2018 as an assistant project manager on their multifamily division. So I was working on multifamily apartment jobs.
But you brought that tech with you, right?
I brought the knowledge of the tech. Shortly after I started here, they said, hey, we're looking into project management solutions, and we have a list. Do you want to be on the tech committee that's going to help pick it? I was like, well, yeah, I will. And we ended up with Procore again. So I got to do the whole implementation process again.
But it was your decision this time, right? Instead of being forced down on you.
It wasn't my decision. It was my, we all came to that conclusion that Procore
you participated in the decision, I guess. Yeah, at least.
Correct.
So you learned from the first time. How was the second? And were you able to use some of those, you know, learning and experiences to you know, make it go maybe a little differently the second time?
Yeah, just like with projects, you have lessons learned that you do. Same thing with implementing technology. You use what didn't work to help you better with something else later on the road.
What are some of the things that, like, people should be watching out for in it so that maybe they don't have to learn those same lessons?
Watching out for as in?
Gotchas. Like, what are the things that, you know, immediately, you know, you were new to Spring Valley, you're looking at PM software, you did it at another spot. What were some of the first things you said, listen, we can't make this mistake? Like, and honestly, people make mistakes. It's the learning part, right?
The biggest one I found back then was the directory. You need to lock down who has access to add people there. Otherwise, you're going to have 3 Acme constructions, or in our case, there was like 30 of them.
So because people, it's like standards, right?
Yeah, having your permissions set, your standard operating procedures in line before you just say, hey, here this is, everybody just use it.
Oh, no one's ever had, you know, a system with 20 different of this construction company versus this supplier. Well, is it, you know, do we spell DeWalt all capital letters or is it D lowercase e? And okay, now we have 3 or 4 of them. Yeah, that's an interesting one. We haven't heard that one here before. Nathan?
Well, and once you even do decide that, it really comes down to the enforcement or how do you actually get everyone, again, down to collaboration and you know, adherence. Try to not you know, have too much of a top-down voice to this. But that is a huge part of it, right? And I feel like you've sort of been in between that of having to take a decision from above and then deliver that downstream. I mean, what are either some of the challenges or tactics or lessons learned? How's that experience been for you, kind of the downstream side of it?
So on the downstream side of it, I mean, it's by getting buy-in from the field. Our job is to make the field's job go quicker. We're all trying to get a project done. And if it's something that will benefit them, they typically have pretty good buy-in here with it. Another thing that we've done in the past is on our committees, when we're trying to introduce something new, we have someone from the field on that committee as well. And that way they can help and say they might think of something that we haven't and say, hey, what if it does this? And someone like me, I would have never thought of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they're really experiencing it in the field. So that getting that buy-in and getting everybody at the table is critical to picking the right solution, right? Because probably sometimes it's a problem you didn't know they had.
Yes, and that's why we used a value survey to gauge the value of our technology use back in December. And we put in there, hey, what's something in your job that can make your job better? Or what's something we could do to make your job better?
Yeah, I love that. Nathan, you know this. I used to do this as a consultant and then started giving away on stage. Like the best questions you can ask when you're talking to the field or talking to anybody, honestly, is, you know, if you had a crystal ball, you could make anything, you know, we called it the Santa Claus question. If Santa Claus showed up tomorrow and could bring you anything except a Ferrari to get you from job site to job site, what would they bring you? What would this solution be? And they come with the big problems. Another one that I love is, where does good information go to die? Meaning what form, what thing are you filling out that is just absolutely doing nothing for you? And that usually opens eyes on what's going on. So I'm wondering, you took a little, you're a construction, you know, technology manager now at Spring Valley, but you took a little detour before you got there. So talk a little bit about what you did in the middle there.
I did. So in 2021, I ended up leaving And I went back to the high school I went to, and I was the construction teacher for that program. I've been family friends with the former teacher my entire life, and he called me and said, hey, I have to move. Do you want to come take this over? And so I went, and then I ended up being an instructor for skills. So I got to see what it's like to, hey, all these permission slips, you have to check grades. You got to make sure that they're attending classes, and then they can go to competition. So it's a whole different side on the teacher side of things.
So many thoughts on, yeah, measurements and different, you know, ways we can go down this. Because I think part of, I agree with your point earlier that, you know, if it's not more efficient for the field, like, why should they care? But at the end of the day, as a construction technologist or as a company, there are certain things like the Procore decisions or some of these large decisions of like, well, as a company, we need to consolidate our data in a place where we can have visibility. And if that's asking for information that we haven't asked for before, like somebody may, you know, it may end up adding more time to someone's plate. Like, just let's just face it, right? Like that situation, I'm sure at some point has come up. So there has to be like a different argument other than just how does this save your time? And I don't know, I'm wondering if that teacher experience and coming back, like how much that's, you know, maybe shaped or maybe, you know, change like how you approach bringing the teaching. Because really, at the end of the day, you are a teacher, right? Like you're bringing knowledge to the field in your role now. So like, yeah, how did that teaching experience kind of shape, you know, how you do that now inside Spring Valley?
Yeah, I think learning patience was my biggest thing as a teacher. You think that the kids know everything about a tool, and then one of them will go try and use a saw backwards. So learning patience and being just like with our field teams, be patient with them. You may know all the ins and outs of this product now, but they might not know it yet. So they're going to have questions and you'll have to get the answers for them.
Yeah, it's a unique part that you've learned. We've talked about this over time. Like each of those kids is in a different learning position, right? Some of them might pick up the tools. Like you said, the tools might be second nature to them, but there's probably other parts of the process, like interviewing, you know, and having to stand up there in front of people and talk about what you're doing. Those things aren't easy. So, and they're different in each area, which is the same, right? You'll have an experienced field superintendent that, you know, has been building multifamily and others forever, but now you're putting this entirely new tool in front of them. So they have to experience sort of what feels like kind of being stupid, to be honest. Like you're not, but that's how it feels. And you have to be patient with them to bring them along to get them there. So yeah, a lot of people could learn from your lesson there. So you learned that, you got the patience, you came out, you've got some really, you know, Procore is awesome. Project management is key, but you've got some other really big things you're pushing on. So talk a little bit about, you know, sort of this forward-looking technology, where you're pushing now, what you're excited about.
Yeah, so our company is actually entirely Mac-based, which is very different. But we do have a couple Windows PCs in the field for AutoCAD, for doing field measurements. Other than that, the entire company is Mac-based. So when I'm looking at software, I'm looking for it to be OS agnostic or web-based. First day when I started back here, one of the owners came up to me and said, hey, we need a project scheduling software that we can actually use. Legacy software we had, they were in beta mode for a couple years and they weren't getting anything to work on a Mac consistently. So we ended up, I tested 10 different softwares and finally landed on Outbuild. And we've been working with them ever since. We're actually live training with all our superintendents to get the 3-week look ahead in Outbuild this week.
So talk about that 10 different things to go after. How'd you organize that? And, you know, what was your process like for evaluating all of that?
So I just start by Google searching and saying, hey, construction project scheduling software, make a list. And then does it work on Mac? Nope. Okay. Cross it off.
Start with the must-haves, right?
Yep,
it's got to work on my stuff.
Got to work either web-based or Mac-based.
Interesting. So, but you had to have, you know, really dug in to currently where you were with scheduling and where you wanted to get to. So what were some of the key components that you wanted to get out of a solution that really drove you to land on Outbuild?
So the requirements we had, it was basically a scheduling system that would work. I took it a step further. It's a scheduling system that would work and also not clutter our server, because doing a schedule update would be a file every week or every time the project was updated, it'd be a new file saved in our server. And so having it web-based, it's all connected. You can go back and look at previous updates and previous baselines, and it's all in one spot. So now our executive team, they can go in and look at any project schedule all from one web page without having to say, hey, go to this PM's folder, go to that project, go to point 17 construction schedule and dig in from there.
Well, and not only that, I mean, I'm looking at their integration with Procore. I assume you're using the Procore integration, or is there schedule information tying back and forth, or are you guys just using it standalone?
Yeah, so we're using it. It's tied to Procore just to populate the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And then another good integration they have is importing companies and contacts from Procore, because then you can actually assign, hey, Mr. Plumber, these are your items. You can filter the schedule by that plumber's company's name and then print out their schedule. It'll give them just their items.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool stack too, right? Because you learn the lessons learned about who should control that information and why it's important to control it and make it consistent. Because now you're, you know, Nathan, we love a good CDX, right? A common data exchange. You're now able to exchange real data between the companies, between the systems, and it keeps the fidelity. And then you can really use it for your teams in the field. And also now you're using it for execs. So this is it's a cool way that you're keeping those components together. What are you guys excited? What are you excited about for the teams to sort of gain from all this?
So originally we were just doing it for project schedule. And then I was talking to our general superintendents over our field guys, and they saw that, hey, there's a look ahead planning feature to it. Can we look into using that? I was like, well, yeah, of course. So we went through it, and then talking to Ben over at Outbuild, we actually have him coming in to do an in-person training with all our field guys over the course of 2 days, just getting it off of Excel.
Yes.
Trying to kill it.
Well, trying to kill Excel.
And making it more collaborative, right? I mean, because, you know, a less digital but more collaborative way of doing look-ahead planning is with sticky notes, right? Like, you know, actually getting everyone in a room and looking at a whiteboard and actually playing it out. And so, like, this almost seems like the best of both worlds, where, you know, you can bring folks into the conversation, have them be part of that look-ahead, but also have it in a digital cloud-based solution. So, yeah, it sounds like a win-win.
Yeah, it's like you said with the sticky notes, digital pool planning. You can see who's responsible for what, and then you have that. You can commit to it on the app, and then it'll send it out all the subs. And then, hey, we said we'd have this done by this date, and go from there. Another cool feature of the look ahead is that when you progress your stuff in your look ahead, it feeds it back to the master. It'll progress it back to the master. So when you're doing your weekly schedule updates between the office and the field guys, it's not like a 2-hour conversation or a 3-hour schedule update. It's, hey, what'd we get done this week? Oh, it's already updated. Okay, print it and send it off to the owner.
So are you guys measuring plan percent complete, PPC?
Yes. So we're just on our schedule task, where when it's complete, we'll put 100%. Some of our guys are doing it like throughout the process, 20%, 40 or whatnot.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that, because look at planning and all this pull planning and all these kind of lean terms get into, you know, measuring that, just like in baseball, like, you know, nobody's going to bat 1,000. Right. And so it's the same sort of thing with commitments and things like that. Like, are people being honest with whether they're actually meeting commitments or not? So we can actually learn from, you know, increases or decreases in plan percent complete versus just saying, you know, yep, we got it done on the date we said we would, even though we kind of maybe fluffed it a couple of days because of this or because of that. Like, I guess, like, how granular are you getting with some of that documentation or some of that, I guess, you know, quote unquote transparency that usually we would never document in the past and probably still maybe not today? I don't know. What's your stance on it?
Well, I mean, it just helps with when you're doing monthly billings. You're getting a bill from a subcontractor. They're billing for this amount of work done. you can look at your schedule and say, hey, yeah, they actually have this work done.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, showing the measurements. And man, I mean, look, 3-week look aheads all the way back to my day in masonry are difficult and difficult to communicate. And then getting the office and the field on the same page, that 3 hours, Trevor, is not just 3 hours of fun conversation. There is a lot of back and forth in it, and it can get heated at times and get, because again, it's hard to understand if you're, I'm looking at an Excel spreadsheet and you're looking at your weird schedule dot 17. And are we on the same page here? That this probably gets a lot of friction out of the game.
It does. And it's just helping them be more collaborative. If you're saving time, that's giving the field guys more time to actually do what they're there to do, which is to build the project.
And they enjoy that. And so, you know, Nathan, to your WIFMs, that's what's in it for them, is more time to build. And I think over time, you find that money ball thing happens, right? Nobody bats 1,000. Where do we consistently not bat 1,000? Then you can focus on why. Are we just poorly planning how long this thing takes? Or do we have some sort of bottleneck in our system, in our process that we can fix? That's, by the way, something that I think field folks love to do. I know they love new tools. I know they love to do and build with new materials that are faster, easier. We kind of have to position the technology that way. What else do you, so you got scheduling. I love to hear that because, you know, when I spent the last year kind of looking around, scheduling is one of the big ones, man. It is ripe for change. I don't like the term disruption. It's ripe for change and modernization. Where else in the organization did you see a need to, you know, make some changes and maybe improve what you guys were up to?
So I know another one that I actually kind of slowly brought on before I had left previously, but it was Open Space, our reality capture. And we started using it on one project that we had out of town. I was actually the APM on that project down in Houston. And instead of having to drive to the project every week or every 2 weeks, our executive leadership could actually go see progress photos from the Open Space captures.
So it allowed that work, them to get closer to that work without having to make those drives and whatnot. But that's where you started it. Seems to have grown inside the company now.
It has. So we actually have an enterprise deal with Open Space now. We have it on every project. Not every project will use it, like a small little road project or infrastructure. We're basically filming dirt at that point. But remodels has been a big one for us. We can go see what was in there before, during demolition, and after the tie-in to the new building.
So have you built that into sort of the process where, like, if you're going to do a remodel, you're going to walk it with Open Space beforehand?
Yeah. So for remodels and additions, our pre-con team will actually check one of the cameras out and go walk it. And then our APMs actually do the during construction progress updates. The big ones for us is pre-drywall and then post-drywall, because then you can see what's in the walls before drywall. So, hey, we're going to be drilling in this wall to hang something. Have you checked Open Space to make sure there's not a pipe behind it?
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned check in and check out because I know you need the 360 camera and then the software. Is that something where a project would check it out, or once they're on the project, they would just have one on site? How does that work as far as your inventory on the cameras?
So we have 4 cameras currently, and we have 14 active jobs. So they have to... that they have to share. Mm-hmm. So the APMs, they have a little whiteboard that says, hey, camera 3's out on this project and we capture on Wednesdays. Well, a project down the road might need it on Thursday, so they'll just pick it up from them.
So a little bit of a, you know, you got to schedule the equipment, right? That's, you know.
That's pretty agile. I like that.
That's agile. And we see that with total stations and laser scanners and those kinds of things, right? You can't afford to have, in some cases, can't afford to have one for every job. It's just not realistic. And it's not, you're not using it every day. So it's caused you guys to probably schedule a little bit more. But overall, so, and this is funny, we're going to say this. So you left, you went to school, you came back, and it was really cool. Nathan found this post about you're a boomeranger. So, again, it's one of those terms that just starts flying around. You're a boomeranger. So you left and came back, and it seems to be part of the company culture that you can, you know, take some time, maybe learn some new things and come back. Why come back? Like, what is going on at Spring Valley right now that's got you excited and looking ahead?
Yeah, it's just the company culture is what really drew me back. One of our VPs, Brent Archer, he was on my advisory panel at the high school. And we had a bunch of construction professionals on the advisory panel. Well, after one of the meetings one day, he goes, "Hey, we're looking for a construction tech guy." He goes, "I know you were interested in doing that before you left. Would you consider coming back?" And that turned into a year-long conversation, many conversations with my wife. And then we ultimately decided that, yeah, at the end of the school year, I'd switch back over.
That's awesome, because teaches a couple people listening, right? Like, we try to talk about this a lot. Like, don't burn the bridge when you leave. Right. And but I also want to say this to companies, like, because I hear this so often in the industry, especially like you didn't cross the lines, so to speak. Right. You went to educating in building trades, which drives more awareness around the trades themselves and into, you know, the market. But there are people who leave construction to go to tech. And it's seen in a lot of cases, like it burns a bridge without them really burning it. And I want people to understand that this natural flow of people to technology, to teaching, to even outside of industry and coming back provides a diversity of experience that then allows you to succeed. So if you think back, say you skipped that time at the school and they gave you that construction technology manager job, do you think you'd be as successful without that experience in the school?
No, I think the experience in the school is what helped me learn what I needed to do to be able to be successful in this role.
That is the mic drop moment of mic drop moments. That's what I want people to understand, because that's how I got involved in software. I was an IT person. And I needed something new. And a VP of product development or software development for the company said, "Listen, do you want to be the best IT person you can in the future? Come learn how to build software. Because ultimately, that's what your IT stack, your IT world is built on. So come learn how to build it. Walk a mile in those shoes." And that started, and I've walked back and forth from industry to technology to industry to consulting. So I want to encourage people to follow that, Trevor. What advice do you have for people? Because construction technology manager is an interesting position. What advice do you have for them that, you know, you can leave them with sort of your lessons learned on it?
Have lots of patience. Learn a lot, I would say. Do a lot of research. I probably read about 2 or 3 different new articles a day. And it's not just about the construction industry. It's healthcare or what's going on in education or helping out with skills. I'm just always learn.
That's awesome. Constantly learning. I like it. Well, listen, Trevor, we're hit that time. I want to thank you for finally getting a chance to sit down with us. Long time. We didn't even get to that. Long time listener, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I've been a listener back when it was the Contact Trio, and then back when y'all were doing the traveling road shows.
Oh, the Contact road shows, man. Blast from the past. The trio, as it were, at one point in time. And I think that is important, Trevor, that, you know, you've listened to us for a long time. We caught up at a couple of shows recently and finally, you know, got to bring you on. I want to encourage other people in that position. If you're listening in and you've been listening for that long, like, come tell us the stories, right? That's the beauty of what Nathan and I get to do now, is tell the stories of the people who are actually doing it. So congratulations for actually being out there and doing it. And congratulations to Spring Valley for having the forward thought to, you know, come grab you, bring you back, and give you this position to take advantage of technology. We need it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Nathan, thank you for sitting down with me today, buddy.
Oh, man. Thank you, guys. And thank you, Trevor. This is an awesome learning from you. Thanks for sharing your knowledge.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Trevor Baggett. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.